Hello and welcome to Weekly Monotony, the official podcast of the entertainment blog, dailymonotony.com. Now with real-time weapon changing.
Real-time weapon change?
I'm, of course, your host, Dustin Englund.
I'm Scott.
And I'm Sean.
Great, so...
Yeah. We need no introduction.
No, I guess not. We should be old hands at this now, going into our fourth official podcast. So, as always, we're going to start off with what we've been watching, what we've been playing. Scott, what have you been watching, what have you been playing? I hope it's not House and or anything on ABC or anything that you would want us to watch.
Well, actually, no. I completely avoided Lost this past week. I guess I'll have to pick that up on the go.abc.com streaming. But I actually just returned, just literally hours ago, from a screening of Milk.
The Oscar,
which fortunately just opened in my area.
Thing. Yeah,
I was very excited. You know, probably deserving of the slot that it has on the Best Picture nominees. Although collectively, all five of them do not deserve any of those slots on the basis certain other movies aren't there. But amazing performance by Sean Penn. And a compelling story, obviously based on a true story. The narrative is a little bit uneven in certain places, but overall, I think it's a redeeming movie, a sort of solid A-minus for me.
Hmm. Now, Sean Penn won the SAG actor for Best Actor in a Drama Performance over Mickey Rourke, which I think was a huge upset, and sort of the only indicator that Mickey Rourke is not going to win the Oscar for Best Actor. I don't know if you've seen The Wrestler yet, but do you feel that was a justified win for Sean Penn?
Well, it is a really spectacular performance. I haven't seen The Wrestler yet, but I would easily say it is the best performance by a male actor I've seen in a movie this year, this eligibility cycle.
Okay, cool.
I'll get back to you when I've seen The Wrestler, and then we can have a miniature Academy argument.
Duke that one out. Cool. Have you been playing anything this week?
Does
no,
Rock Band
count?
Okay. No, actually, I have. Those of you who are sort of mod aficionados may have heard of something called Cinematic Mod for Half-Life 2.
Yeah.
It's been around for a while, and this dude keeps putting out new versions of it. The most recent version takes Half-Life 2 Episode 1 and Episode 2 and updates all of them so they're in the Orange Box engine.
Wait, I thought... Well, Episode 2 is definitely in the Orange Box engine to begin with.
Correct, but Half-Life 2 is not.
Right, so is it basically just like adding like plus-plus to Bloom?
Well, some people might accuse it of that, but he also, of course, patches a bunch of the textures up to a much higher resolution.
Right.
And also gives you new character models in the event that you weren't satisfied with the old Alex model. He offers his own version that's kind of like Adriana Lima with more plastic surgery.
See, I thought it was weird. I played the original cinematic mod the second time I played through Half-Life 2 because it really does... It upgraded some of the textures. Like, you actually load like a gigabyte of new textures that are much higher res. I actually enjoyed some of the sort of the music. Like, he stole music from the original Batman Begins. Like, so that
yes,
little Hans Zimmer stuff, or the Hans Newton Howard Zimmer guy stuff.
Yeah, Hans Newton Howard.
Yeah. So it's. I thought it was cool, but that was one of the weird things I thought is they really did change the Alex model. And to be fair, the first time I played through Half-Life 2, like, I thought the Alex model was fine. Like, you know, I don't play the games to find myself attracted to, you know, a feminine protagonist, but I thought it was a weird change. Like, it was like, really? It wasn't good enough the first time?
Apparently not. Yeah. But it is, if you have an absurdly powerful PC, you can check that out. It makes the game interesting. I would say gives it some replay value. You may not enjoy what he's done, but you'll at least find it interesting. So
cool. Sean, been watching anything? Been playing anything?
Yes, I'll have to give that mod a try. My computer may not be quite up to snuff on that, but it did a decent job in the Orange Box, so I'll check that out.
And it's worth playing through just any of the Orange Box stuff again too. Like Episode 2 is still a great game.
Speaking of mods, I tried a few with my PC version of Fallout 3 and found some that make the people look much less zombified, much less dead, and actually add some color to the
eye. Much less oblivion.
Like,
I think there were there were similar mods for the original Oblivion to make the characters less stony-faced.
Less creepy, stony-faced. Yeah. So that does enhance things. Let's see, what else? So, haven't really been watching things on TV, because I don't typically do that.
Sure.
But I did go to see a movie this evening as well. Oh. I went to go see Paul Blart, Mall Cop.
And that's an interesting one, because, you know, that's definitely one of those movies that I looked at and was like, oh crap, this looks terrible. But for, like, the past two weekends, it's been the top thing in the box office, so there must have been something, like, you know, it wasn't the first week and people came back and said, oh, this really was terrible, because people went and saw it again, so...
Yeah, I actually have to say I enjoyed it, and maybe this is a time to talk about it in detail, or maybe we can do that later. What do you think?
I think we should probably wait to do that later. We'll talk about that after we're done with our main feature, if we got some time.
Yeah, just as a preview of what's ahead, I thought it had some interesting social commentary that ties into something I talked about a couple of podcasts ago.
Oh, interesting.
So.
Cool. Yeah, great. Really. So this week, I actually managed to pick up Taken, which is that Liam Neeson movie that was actually made by Eurocore and was released in Europe like a long time ago. And for a long time, people didn't think it was going to be released in the U.S. Finally did get its release. It's actually, I think, Scott, you told me it's doing well at the box office already.
It looks like it had a pretty nice Friday pickup on a weekend that's traditionally not very motion picture heavy, because dudes who tend to watch action movies are busy watching something else on the television instead.
Right. But, yeah, all I can say is that I absolutely love this movie. And I want to preface this, it's not a great movie. Like, there are huge flaws with it. I think mostly with some of the performances of the before it really gets into the action stuff. But it really does a great job of sort of, like, sweeping aside all this junk at the beginning, getting you straight into this action where Liam Neeson is basically going, like, psycho badass on these Albanian guys who have kidnapped his daughter into a sex slave ring. And it's some of the craziest, like, most fluid fighting and crazy stuff I've seen since, like, a Bourne movie. Only Liam Neeson, to me, fits that part so much better, because he's this huge, you know, hulking Irish guy. All I can say is, like, you know, after, you know, I've said this more in my text review, which you can find on dailymonotony.com. But it's, you know, after this sort of steady diet of sort of Oscar films, it's so refreshing to just go to a movie that you know is not going to be great, and just, you know, expect something good and fun. And Taken is totally that movie. So if you're sick of seeing, like, these, you know, hard, you know, huge theme movies, you know, stuff with about, you know, the Holocaust and the that leaves you sad and crying, go see Taken. It's quite fun.
Interesting that you mentioned the Holocaust in association with a Liam Neeson film.
That's a good point. Oscar-winning performance in Schindler's List.
Well, yeah. Not to mention the fact that this is obviously year for Holocaust movies.
Apparently, it's a We'll see if Miss Winslet can prophetically predict her own win by doing a Holocaust movie. Yeah.
Well, just her and Meryl Streep.
But yeah, as far as what I've been playing this week, so I actually went and picked up some of the casual games that Sean listed from his top 10. I picked up Dino Run and played for a while, and it's actually, like, I don't think I liked it quite as much as you did, Sean, but it's what's really fun is there is, so you know, basically this dinosaur running along this course trying to outrun this big wave of disaster coming at you. And what Sean said before is, like, it really is cool. Like, once this big sort of wave of, like, exploding stuff catches up to you, like, the screen goes dark and everything is black and there's just this huge cloud of darkness. It will consume you, and you can still run and jump even though this thing is consuming you, and, like, you're frantically trying to get away from it. And then after you get away,
it
gives you
a rock
that,
and it's like
right, and after you get away, you get this thing that's, you know, that says, like, you doom surfing 12 seconds, and
yes
just for that experience, I would say this is definitely a game you should go check out. So
I mean, it's probably not going to consume you for months and months, but there's a little bit more under the surface as well, because there's the ability to play with other people online.
Right.
to race and other stuff too, so it's cool. Oh, something I didn't mention that I have been playing this week, just last night, in fact, I picked it up for Lars for his birthday, Super Mario Galaxy. Now, I played it way back when, a little after it came out, and enjoyed it, but this time, he was in the driver's seat, basically, and I picked up the second Wiimote and
to
did
shoot
little
the stars,
star catching.
Yeah.
And had a blast with it. Had a real blast.
It's a really great game. That's like one of the two games I own for my Wii. Sadly enough, but it really is a great Mario title. I think overall I love the stuff they do with sort of messing around with gravity, and everything is basically a little planetoid that you can run around and kind of messes with your sense of what's up and what's down. Overall, yeah. Really solid platformer.
Now, something that Lars said, and he is a classic gamer at heart, right. I mean, truly.
Right.
He lives for the 2D stuff. He's no good at Halo or Half-Life, but man, he can kick ass at Mega Man.
Right.
Hard stuff, but, you know. What he said was, this did the best job at capturing what was essentially Mario in a 3D space. And I think I'll have to agree, it did far better than even Super Mario 64, which was this very open 3D platformer. Whereas this is, it's close, it's small, so it doesn't have these huge distances that you're traversing, except, you know, as you get shot from one little planetoid to the next.
Sure.
And there's a lot of stuff that is essentially 2D. Like, one of the levels that's very memorable, you're on this little capsule, and then you eventually get inside, and it switches gravity directions in various parts of it. But you just, basically, it's 2D Mario again, except mapped around a cylinder.
Right.
So it's got some really fun stuff to it as well, and highly imaginative.
I would agree. I didn't play Mario Sunshine, which was the intermediary between Mario 64 and Super Mario Galaxies. But I did think it was a great game. Though I would totally take you to task that Mario 64 is the better game, just because it was such an amazing transition from, like, you know, a 2D, you know, Mario platform, going all the way back to the original NES to this amazing open world Mario platform game, which still I think goes down as one of the best 3D platformers. And for that to be your release title, that's amazing.
Hey. I didn't say that it was better than Mario 64. I said it was better at capturing what was essentially Mario in the original 2D games,
so
as a 3D experience.
So better provisionally.
Better at that. Mario 64 absolutely was a groundbreaking and incredible game in just blowing open the 3D platformer and really being the first to nail that concept and to do it well. But it had some things that made it fundamentally different from the older Mario games,
sure.
Which is fine. That,
sure.
That was actually refreshing. I know that one review said, you know, it was like it made just the feel of leaping in the air fun again.
Yes, absolutely.
And I have to absolutely agree with that. So no, that's not taking anything from what Super Mario 64 did. I mean, when I got my Nintendo 64, if I had gotten it as a surprise for Christmas, I would have been like that kid on YouTube. Absolutely. So, yeah. Just
cool. Well,
gotta say that.
Cool stuff. So yeah, I think that was basically my wrap. Actually, I want to tack on one more thing. I just actually finished watching on Netflix Instant Watch a movie called Broken Flowers. Now Broken Flowers is a Bill Murray movie, and it's kind of one of his post comedy. Or I guess, you know, his sort of what I call his second wave of sort of good Bill Murray, which is kind of the stuff he's done with Wes Anderson, the stuff he did in Lost in Translation, and this I would sort of wrap it into that grouping. it's the story of Bill Murray plays this this old guy who basically gets a letter that finds out that he had a son with, you know, a previous flame, and you know, he's still not married. He's still, you know, kind of, you know, he's sort of gone past his prime and come to a point where he's sort of sad that he hasn't done anything with his life. And it's basically him going around meeting up with his old flames, trying to find which one of them sent him this letter, because they send him a letter and don't sign it. Though overall, I feel the movie really fell flat. It almost felt too independent. Like, there were literally at least like 10 or 15 scenes that were like a minute, 2 minute long of just like staring at Bill Murray and him like staring off in the distance or driving a car or being on an airplane. And, you know, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to get from that. Maybe I'm supposed to, you know, get some deeper subtext to that, but I found it poorly edited and a little boring. So if you're into that kind of, you know, Lost in Translation, Wes Anderson style of Bill Murray, you might be tempted to go see this movie, but I would definitely throw some hesitation out there before you see it, unless you're just really, really into out there independent films.
So I was trying to ask, when was this made?
Oh gosh,
like what year?
It must have been in the, you know, I actually didn't look this up, but it was in the 2000s sometime, probably like 2003, 2004.
Okay, really, so a few years.
Really low budget though. It's you know, kind of placed out of time anyway. So, but yeah, I think that covers that up. So let's go ahead and jump back into our top 10 and see if we can't sort of finish up this one. We've got left is my top 10 and Scott's top 10. Since I know Scott's top 10 is much smaller, I'm going to go ahead and ask him to go through his list of top games. So, Scott, why don't you go ahead and jump us off there?
You think I have a list of games?
Or let's say a sticky
how
note.
How can one top 10 be smaller than another top 10? Unless one
as
is less than 10.
A single, I mean, sticky note?
that would be why.
Well, you know, I think we could just organize this by the games that I actually played this year or this past year. And we've already talked sufficiently large quantities about each of them. But, you know, Rock Band 2.
Of course, of course.
If there are other people around, it's the best game on your shelf. If nobody else is around, why are you wasting your time? Conversely, Fallout 3.
No, that's definitely box quotes for that game.
If
you don't
Fallout
have friends,
3, if
you're
there
wasting
are other
your
people
time.
Around, why are you playing it? If nobody else is around, why aren't you playing it?
So
therefore, between Fallout 3 and Rock Band 2, I've had a perfect panoply of all the games I needed to occupy 100% of my spare and non-spare time for this entire past year.
So that's
what can I say?
The complimentary pack of Rock Band 2 and Fallout 3 for when you have friends and when you don't. I think that's about as succinct as we can get into that. Great. Yeah. So I'll go ahead and start on my top 10. And yes, there actually are 10 in my top 10. Though, unlike Sean, I don't have crazy categories, but I do have a ranking order, and I'm going to start at my number 10 and work my way up to number 1. So
tradition.
Oh yes, must keep people waiting so they want to listen all the way to the end.
Right.
So my number 10, and we've talked about this a lot in very recently actually, is Rock Band 2. So yeah, Rock Band 2, what can you say? It is a great continuation of a great platform, which is Rock Band. I was actually not sure if I want to put this one on my top 10, but I figured I had to, because I really did have, you know, several great moments, you know, hanging out with friends, going to parties, and playing Rock Band 2. It has become the de facto party game. And though again, I think we talked about this last time, I don't really think it's Rock Band 2 that did anything. It's really just Rock Band is still really fun to play, and Rock Band 2 is a whole $60 pack of new songs and some little minor tweaks here and there, and like a better guitar peripheral than the original one. But
Rock
still.
Band 2 is Rock Band 2 : more Rock Band.
I think that just about says it. And no,
that's
I have
the subtitle it needs.
And I haven't played Guitar Hero World Tour, but you know, I would like to, and I can imagine that in the right circumstances, I'm sure it's hilariously fun with friends anyway. And I've heard the drum set is also really cool because it actually has real cymbals that you don't have to go buy separately.
That
so
is cool. It is cool. Yeah. Although it's got these little flip-up things that hold your sticks on it, instead of putting them behind the set, it puts them on the front of the set. And a tenacious younger cousin who was just having a little fun actually hit the little flip-up thing and broke it and knocked it down into the body of the drum set. And that was a little... I thought them poorly designed at first, and that sort of cemented that. But other than that, just make sure you flip those things down before you get playing that set.
So clearly Rock Band 2 is the infant or young child-friendly version of your party game. Though if you have children, what are you doing playing video games? Come on. You got parenting to do.
Come on. Well, if they're cousins, what are you doing not playing video games with them? Sharing with them this vast culture that they've only seen a small portion of, especially if they were born, you know, after like 1995, they're just starved for the 80s and early 90s of video games, which really gives you a depth and understanding of how far we've come.
Definitely. And yeah, definitely nothing against the parented gamer out there. We love you as much as the lone singlers like this fun little podcast.
Yeah.
All right. So I'll go ahead and move on to my number 9, which was not on anyone's list before, and that is Grand Theft Auto 4.
You're looking for some people.
We're all looking for that special someone. I need to know what happened. Give me that. For 10 years, I've been searching. Why leave this for you? I guarantee that you will find this man.
Please, no more killing.
Don't do anything stupid, cousin.
We have to find him.
Fine, you guys, you want my work? You got my word!
I'm the one who survived.
Get this done, and we'll talk.
So, okay, I just want to put it out there that, you know, Grand Theft Auto is one of those games that is very controversial and tries to be controversial. Like, it thrives off controversy. The more, you know, Jack Thompson tries to get it banned, the more, you know, foul language and foul situations they throw at this game. So this is not a game for young children to play, and young children should not be allowed to purchase this game, and I will stand by that no matter how many flame emails I end up getting. That being said, I am a adult of reasonable mind, and I found this game mostly to be hilariously fun. You have to sort of stand back and sort of look at the amazing technological achievement that Grand Theft Auto 4 is. They literally rebuilt the entire city of New York in virtual form. Not just like portions of it, not like a concept idea of it, but the entire city. It is stunning to just drive through this city or to take a helicopter ride through the city and just say, holy crud, this is amazing work. So if, you know, even if Rockstar, like, again, I don't necessarily agree with some of the stuff they do, because they try to be a bit edgier than I think they should be, and they try to be a bit more controversial than I think they should be, but they do amazing jobs at providing these virtual sim environments, and if nothing else, it deserves to be on the list for that. Even though I had a very much love-hate relationship with this game, I could name so many things I hate about this game, and yet I still went back and played through hours and hours of this game. The combat mechanics are terrible. What I don't understand is that I played through a great 360 game that was open world where I could shoot. It was called Crackdown. No one played it, and they only played it to get the Halo 3 beta. But it did shooting in an open world environment so well, and Grand Theft Auto 4 came out after it and did it so poorly. I don't understand that. Like, you just have to copy what these guys did. And there's so much that requires you to shoot and requires, like, you to kill this guy before he gets away. And when you miss him because the things are wrong, you fail the mission and have to restart. It made me throw my controller down and not play it for several days until I came back to it because I was having, you know, GTA twitches and had to get my fix again. But so that's a problem. When you fail a mission...
me of snorting too many things.
It might have been. But when you fail a mission, you have to go all the way back to where you started, and if that mission happens to be on the other side of the stinking town, one of the problems with recreating the city of New York is that you have to drive across the city of New York to get to the start of the mission, which you will fail that mission many times and have to drive back to start it and then drive back to finish it. And that just makes you want to stop, especially if it's a really hard mission and you're frustrated. There's no way that you want to just go back and drive across the city for like 5 minutes just to replay that mission. So,
one thing that will drive me to quit playing a game faster than anything else is for it to just annihilate anything greater than a half hour of my playtime.
Yeah.
Or just say, like, okay, wipe that clean, it's gone. One game that did this horrifically, and I didn't play it for a week, was Fallout 3. spoiler alert, but you've probably played it anyway, and it doesn't matter. Anyway, you're on the mission where the Enclave finally show up.
Right.
And you're trying to get the people out of the Jefferson Memorial.
Right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about,
Yeah. So I'm at the end of that, where you have the big face-off, if you choose to do it, while the scientist is trying to open the doors. You're sitting there holding off the Enclave.
Right.
And I've got my heavy weapons skill, and I've got my named Gatling laser, and I'm up on, like, Jet and Psycho and everything. I am this monster, and I just waste everybody in the room.
Right.
And so I want to go pick up their plasma weapons and their armor and repair it together and have my sweet Tesla armor and plasma rifles and all this stuff. Well, I do that, and I decide that I'm going to be a little bit cheeky and try to get up to the ledge by hopping on these pipes.
Yep.
Well, you know, jumping in Fallout 3 is not what it is in Oblivion. Long story short, I get stuck and can't get out. Oh, by the way, the last time the game happened to autosave was not 5 minutes ago when it should have, but 45 minutes ago before I started the mission.
Ah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I know where you're getting to. Though,
a week later, I finally come back and I do it again.
To be fair, I don't think that's... I mean, it is a problem of Fallout 3, and like the fact that you can get stuck, and some tester didn't find that or try that. But the reason why I think it's so much more egregious in GTA 4 is that it's built into the system. Like, it's
right.
You don't have to do something crazy to find this out. You just have to play like the 3 Clover level or whatever it is, where you have to rob a bank and like kill like the entire police force. You have to play that once and fail and have to drive back and do it again to understand, oh yeah, this really sucks. Like that barrier to getting back and playing this level again makes me not want to play this level again because it's really hard.
Right. Really hard game. What they need to do, and what most of them since the arcade days have figured out, is put you back in the action as soon as possible.
Exactly.
Super difficult games like shoot 'em ups, bullet hell shoot 'em ups, are ridiculously difficult. But what do they do when you die? They just destroy all the bullets on the screen and throw you back right exactly where you were until you game over.
Yep. No, I think the ability to do that and sort of bring a person back into the action once they've failed at a challenge is super paramount, which actually leads me into my number 8 game, which is Lionhead Studios' Fable 2.
Will I find the light? Or be swallowed by darkness? I sense hope. Will I foresee harm? Will I know the blade? And taste the blood. I see the figure. I see its shadow. I see myself.
Fable 2. Who will you become?
So
interesting.
So Fable 2 is Peter Molyneux's sequel to the original Fable. And first of all, you need to know some background on Peter Molyneux. Peter Molyneux is this crazy British guy who really likes to drive sort of the edge of what you can do in games. And he's super passionate about making games, you know, have like human connection and human emotion, human feelings built into them, so they actually care about what you're doing in the game, and that if you think you can do in a game, you can do in a game. So he's really big about driving kind of the design of that. And he tried to do that in Fable 1. It didn't work very well, and he actually came out and apologized to everyone for making Fable 1. So Fable 2 was kind of his sort of redemption thing. It's like, can Peter Molyneux pull off what he promised in Fable 1 and now what he's promising in Fable 2? And I would like to say that I think he does for the most part. Fable 2 is it's a role-playing game, but it's mostly an action game. In fact, I would consider one of its biggest problems is that all the action in Fable 2 is hack and slash action. Like, you get three buttons. One of them does like a ranged attack, one of them does a melee attack, one of them does a magic attack. And since so much of, you know, since almost every game is built around combat, you're going to spend a lot of time fighting things. And one of my biggest problems with this is that it really ends up boiling down to being hack and slash. You go around to all these different cool environments, you do this, you know, these really cool stories and have these really cool interactions, but then you end up slogging through combat, which is button mashing. And that's why it ended up as number 8 and not higher, because beyond that, it's a really cool game. It's got a fun story. It's kind of corny, but it's still fun. It's got great voice acting, because they're all British people, and even British kids can do great voice acting. Beyond that, it's just a really, really fun game. You really can interact with anyone in the game. You can pick up anything in the game. You can, well, maybe not quite anything. Maybe not to the degree that you could, like, pick up, like, pencil cans in Fable 3, Fallout 3.
In the original Fable that really, really bugged me.
Sure.
They had these beautiful environments, but there were invisible walls everywhere. I mean, you just look around and you walk up to something and it's, you know, it's this beautifully rendered tree or something, but but its hit detection, its hit area is basically a box. And it just bugged the crap out of me that these were basically, it was like using a cardboard set. All of this beautiful background stuff, but it boiled down to not nearly as interesting as it could have been.
Now, you see, I think Fable 2 actually really does a better job of that, because there are no invisible walls. Anywhere you can see, you can run to. They do a lot better job with the level design itself, though, because you're actually, you know, you're constrained inside basically these bowl levels where it's obviously I can't go over that cliff, or I can't go over to this place, because there's no way for me to climb this sheer cliff face. And that's, I think, a better way to do it. It's not, oh, look at that nice tree over there, bang, you cannot walk in that direction. So,
yeah, there was some problem with this in Fallout 3 as well. Not to a huge degree, but once you get into
this. It's really hard in Fallout 3 to find the edge of the map, and so, though I admit I did it several times. But Fable 2, great game. I totally recommend it. I really think it does live up mostly to what Peter Molyneux promised. There's some kind of weird aspects of it, like you can like get married and have children and like abandon your family and get married and have more children in other places. So it does offer you these options, but to some degrees it gets like a little weird, and like I'm not exactly sure how interesting that was, or like the personal interactions you have. But beyond that, it's a fun game. If you're into fantasy environments, if you're at all a follower of Peter Molyneux, which I would say he's a developer that you should be following and listening when he announces games, totally check out Fable 2.
We should get James' article on storytelling in games up on our blog. That would be awesome.
Definitely, yeah. We should post that up. Scott, what were you going to say?
So what you're saying is Fable 2 is not an orgasmic rape simulator?
It is not an orgasmic rape simulator. Alas. The conservative blogs will have to find another one. And that was Mass Effect, by the way. That was the orgasmic rape simulator. Great. So let's move on to my number 7. My number 7 is one we talked about on Sean's list, and we actually had a pretty good discussion on, and that is EA and DICE's Mirror's Edge. Again, this is a great game. It's a cool, unique IP. I hope they do a lot more with this game. I hope we see this sort of first-person parkour platformer do a lot more things in other games, and other people take up this sort of flag, because I think it was a cool way of presenting a story, a cool way of presenting a game and challenges. So I think a home run, or maybe not a home run, but at least a strong double or maybe even a triple by DICE, which is really only been known for the Battlefield games, which I thought this is a great sort of, you know, left turn for DICE to go and make this platforming game. So totally an awesome game. And I would also mention that there is a download pack that is coming in the future from DICE, which is there are levels that you can play through, but they're not actually like story levels. They're these abstract environments that are totally built around you figuring out crazy ways to jump around them. Like, they're just cubes and shapes hanging in the middle of the air, which I am totally looking forward to because it looks crazy awesome, like jumping through an M.C. Escher painting. So
that sounds awesome.
So I'm really looking forward to that. But again,
I'll probably purchase the game or something.
that would also be a good thing to do, is you actually spend your money and not acquire it through means that are illicit.
Well, I didn't pirate the game. What I mean by that is I'll have to purchase it so that I have it. I've played it via other methods.
I gotcha. I was not, of course, insinuating that any pirating had gone on. I was simply making my PSA to the general.
Yes.
I would like to state that at Daily Monotony, we are friends of the Pirate Guild.
Yes, we do know the pirate handshake and support the overthrow of Sealand.
And, yes.
And moving on.
Moving on.
Right along. I told you I was pretty good at bowling.
Cool. So my number six, and this is one we've also talked to death, but it is Bethesda's Fallout 3. So Fallout 3, it has to go on your top 10 because it really is a cool game. It does a great job of pulling you into this Mad Max environment, which is awesome. You know, there's nothing else that quite does something like Fallout 3 does. That being said, I do think it has problems. I definitely didn't enjoy this game as much as I did Oblivion. I played Oblivion just like Scott for like 200 hours plus and enjoyed every second of it. And I was thinking about this, and I really think this is what it comes down to, is that I enjoyed walking through the land of Cyrodiil, which was the imaginary land for Oblivion, just because it was beautiful. There was so much cool stuff to look at. You know, you're basically like walking through a forest and you look up and you see this huge ivory tower jutting up, and it makes you feel happy to just walk around and listen to this kind of fun fantasy medievalish kind of music. Whereas Fallout 3, I mean, it's cool what they do. Like, it's a neat environment, but like after you've walked through your
all directions.
I mean, what after you've walked through your fifth sort of irradiated tunnel or subway systems, it's just, you feel bad. Like, you don't want to stay in that environment. It really is a depressing place to be. And it's cool that they made that, but, like, that's, I think that's really why I didn't play it much more. Is like, after a while, you just feel like you don't want to play it anymore. It just feels a little edgy, and it makes you feel not as
they
good.
They did a good job. They did a good job.
Exactly.
at creating that environment. But, yeah, you're right. It's not an environment that you want to hang around in, or an environment that's built to be enjoyed.
Exactly.
It's one that's built to be survived.
I would say so. So it's kind of like, I mean, there are elements of it that are sort of like playing a survival horror game, which I love survival horror games, and you'll actually see one of them on my list in the future, spoiler. But yeah, it's not something that you can just play for 200 hours and without, you know, feeling terrible.
Yeah.
But that's Fallout 3. Great game. I'm sure to be, if not already, on sort of the top lists around other game pundit sites. But I will move on to my number four. Go for it.
It's time for a little journalism on your journalism. Well, back in October 11 of 2008,
oh, no, here
you said
we go.
On a certain website, quote, regarding Fallout 3, quote, having only played 10 minutes of it in PAX, I feel confident in staking my reputation as a reviewer in saying game of the year.
Yes.
End quote. This has officially come back to bite you.
I was hoping you weren't going to find that, but Okay,
so there goes your reputation. Not quite game of the year.
I will take.
It sounds like number six of the year at best.
I will take my poison on this one, and yes, I did think this was going to be amazing because it looked awesome, and it was the sequel to the game that I played probably the most of any game on 360. So a good game,
except for Halo 2.
A good game, but not the best game of the year. I'm sorry, Bethesda. I still love you and hope we're still friends. But beyond
and
my
your reputation as a reviewer, you love
beyond my now ruined reputation as a reviewer, which you might as well, I guess, tune away because it is now all for nothing. But I will trudge on to my number 5 pick, which is Media Molecules and the only reason to own a PS3, except for Blu-ray, Little Big Planet.
On Little Big Planet, you're a little sack person. This one is you. Oh, bless. You're quite a cute one. Now, to move around, use the left stick. Just push it a little for dainty tippy toes, or push it all the way to run like your sacking depends upon it. And don't forget your 3 J's. Jump, jump, jump. Give the action button a short, sharp press for a small hop, or hold it down for a huge, boundy leap. On you go.
So, there's one word that you can use to describe Little Big Planet, and that word is adorable. It is.
I would have gone with cute.
Cute works as well, but adorable is the one I've heard. I've heard more gamers who are, you know, considered to be, you know, try to be manly, or at least attempting to be manly and trying not to be very feminine, use the word adorable with this game, and it is so incredibly adorable. I don't know what it is, but it threw me back to the time when I had teddy bears and liked teddy bears when I was like 3 and 4. This game will do that to you. It's so well put together in this charming little package. And it all starts with the fact that the game, when you plug it in and put it up, it plays like this little intro video with the narration by Stephen Fry. And Stephen Fry is like the voice of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Has it, you know, one of those perfect, you know, British voices. And he sort of talks charmingly about this little big planet and how about it's made up of everyone's dreams all coming together. And the little sack people live on it. And you're like, this is awesome. This is so cool looking. And I don't know what it is about this game, but it is ridiculously fun to play. And not beyond its like sheer cute factor, which, you know, it will drive, you know, the manliest of man to say to, you know, coo over this thing. But it really does make it feel like you've never played like a 2D platformer before. There's something about it, something about like the 24 frames per second style that it presents the game in this sort of film way, something about the fact that you're playing with like these big objects and it really feels like this Honey, I Shrunk the Kids sort of environment, or the fact that everything looks like it's been stitched together with nuts and bolts and is something that you could actually build yourself. I don't know what it is, but it's a remarkably fun game. Media Molecule, I really don't know what else they've done, but good grief, these guys are titans in what they're doing, and this was the reason I went and got a PS3. Like, Blu-ray is an awesome side thing, but when I heard this game was coming out, and when I played it at PAX, I was like, I need to own a PS3 so I could play this game. Totally awesome. Totally worth it.
So my question is, and this will be when I break down and purchase a PS3, is when is Team Eco's thing coming out for
that?
Ah,
yes. Because So Team Eco, of course, there's this, I guess it was a PS2 game called Eco, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so PS2...
Amazing game.
Yeah.
It'll probably be my number 2 game of all time.
Yeah, so Eco was this awesome sort of like black and white, beautiful looking game where you lead around this princess, you're trying to save from this castle or something like that, but really beautiful game. They also end up making a Shadow of the Colossus, which was that awesome game where you're
Speaking
running
of
a...
MC.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
The castle is a bit Escher-esque. I mean, it doesn't have the multiple dimensions of Escherality, if you will, but it's definitely laid out by a madman in terms of its design, but a devious one who knows how to design clever puzzles, nonetheless.
Yeah, but Yeah, I know Team Ico is working on something new, probably coming out this year, but I don't think anyone has heard official rumblings from them yet. But definitely, that's definitely going to be a reason to buy a PS3 if Little Big Planet has not already made you succumb. But yeah, I could go on for hours and hours about Little Big Planet, but I only mention one more thing and we'll move on. So one of the big things about Little Big Planet is they offered you this cool level creation tool. So you can basically go through and make any of the levels that you've seen in this little level editor. It's really awesome. They have a great set of tutorials to sort of teach you how to do stuff. And the coolest thing is once you've made a level, it automatically gets uploaded to this database, and you can go and play anyone else's custom created levels, and you can actually like tag them with little words like, you know, like challenging or fun or clever, and then you can basically say, I want to find, you know, other levels like this or words tagged with this, and it automatically on this cool little like globe thing shows you levels that are like that, and you can just pick up and play a bunch of other people's levels, which none of them are going to be as good as the ones that shipped in the box, the sort of actual levels, but definitely a bunch of awesome little fun creative games that other people have played, and I think that really adds a cool replay value to this. Though my one big fault on this game, and this is why it's at number 5 and probably not, you know, number 1, is that it's really hard to make a level. I spent like 2 weeks trying to make this cool level, and I ran into so many weird little bugs and weird problems of trying to put my stuff together. And, like, all I was trying to do was like make a trap door where like you press a button and this trap door comes down. And it was so difficult. I realized, you know, like I'm a game person. I've done development stuff. If I can't do this, there's no way, you know, like a non like developer person is going to do this. So,
have you seen the video of the adding machine built mechanical parts in Little Big Planet?
I've not, but that's totally awesome.
Ridiculous. They've built basically the original,
mechanically based adding machine. That's
amazing. That's and it's incredible. All done within the physics of Little Big Planet. So it can be done. I don't know how many thousands of hours they put into this, but it can be done.
Yeah. So it definitely, if you're into that sort of developer type stuff, I would, you know, totally go out and do this. And there actually, you know, there is enough community to that you can play this game, play through the normal levels, and also, you know, a great thing is you can play with friends, you can play like with 4 other people, and this is another great party game. So if you have a PS3 and extra controllers, this is a great sort of a relief from Rock Band 2 if you guys are sick of playing that. Also a great game to play with girls. Girls love the little sack puppet guys as much as guys do, and probably to an even greater extent. But adorable game, slightly difficult creation system, and that brings it down a bit, but still awesome. So,
if you are playing with girls, don't try to convince them it's cool that you built a yarn abacus.
probably not going to appreciate it as much as other people would. But anyway, my number 4, and this is one we talked about, is Behemoth's Castle Crashers.
So, yes.
So Castle
we
Crashers.
Need to play more of it. Scott, we just do. We have enough controllers. We need to do it.
It's this. So this is an interesting game. I don't actually own this game, but a friend of mine who works on the XNA team at Microsoft heard about this game coming out and said, "Hey guys, you should come over and we should play this." I was like, "Okay." I like the original Alien Hominid. I love the animation style that they presented, and I even played the demo for it. So it looked cool. So we went over and we spent an entire night and we beat the game, and it was amazing. This game is like really nails like or let me say what this game reminded me of. We used to like have sleepovers with my friends, and we would pull out the old Turtles in Time for Super Nintendo and play through this sort of, you know, 4-player arcade action style hack and slash game, and it was so fun. And this game just brought like all those memories crashing back, if you will.
I just remembered another game I've been playing this week.
Oh sure, what is it?
We downloaded River City Ransom on the Wii Virtual Console. Fantastic game. Amazing. It's so far ahead of its time. It's ridiculous. But continue. And then maybe we can get more of that.
Is it also like a arcade hack and slasher like this?
It's a 2-player beat 'em up in a very similar style. Cool. Yeah.
All right, we'll get back to that if we have some time at the end of the show. But yeah, anyway, Castle Crashers, a really cool game. The really fun part, and where this kind of sort of puts it over the edge of sort of, you know, like games like Turtles in Time and stuff like that, is that there's this cool RPG element to it where you're constantly leveling up. You can choose where you want to put your powers. You can like put stuff into magic and put stuff into just, you know, like brute strength. You can put stuff into speed. And the cool thing is, like, as we were going through this and like leveling up our individual characters through this one crazy night of playing this game, you know, like I ended up being the magic guy, and some other guy ended up being like, you know, like the power smashing guy. And there's this cool team play element that really, it really sort of coalesces well in a, makes for a really fun experience to play with other people. And the fact that you have to revive your friends by walking over them and performing CPR on them, you actually, their whole character goes and like pumps their heart.
Love
and you try to,
that was amazing.
Not only is it a clever way of bringing that system, but it really does bring out, again, more of that team play aspect. So you're not just a bunch of lone wolves playing in the same environment. I would say there's one gripe about this game, is that we were constantly losing track of where we were. It's a really busy looking game, and it's really easy to get lost in like the horde of people you're fighting. So one of my few complaints about this game, but still a really awesome game. Though I have not played it using a using Guitar Hero controller, so that's definitely more epic than I've done.
Yeah, Steven had the drums. And he built himself basically a melee character, because there are no L or R buttons on those things to work for magic. And so he sat there and just wailed on those drums, and it was hilarious and awesome to watch. And he said it was a lot of fun.
You guys should make a YouTube video of people playing Rock Band Castle Crashers.
Yes, I tried it with the guitar, and while it is serviceable, it is not to my liking.
Not the recommended way to play.
I'm kind of a stickler for control stuff, and that can really frustrate me more than anything else. Yep. In fact, I would even say that the Guitar Hero or Rock Band controllers are not even ideal for the games for which they are made. But
sure,
that's another story.
That is another story. Cool. So I will move on to my number three, which is one that was not on your guys' list, I imagine. Probably because you didn't play it, otherwise it would have been. And that is EA's other new IP of this year, which is Dead Space.
Dun, dun, dun. Actually, I played some of that.
Oh, did you? So this
is not a Verizon commercial. Daily Monotony has no associations with the Verizon network.
that's a good point. The Dead Zone or whatever it is. So either way, Dead Space, a first-person shooter / horror survival game from EA Redwood Shores. This game actually came away as like the best game of E3 when all the pundits were going through what was at E3 this year. It was kind of the precursor to a lot of the other big releases, so it came out a bit earlier, so people actually got a chance to play it, which is awesome. But there's something about this game, like, when I was looking back through the stuff that I played, I just loved almost every experience of Dead Space. It's a beautiful game. By far, on my list, the prettiest looking game that I played. I think, despite what some people said, that it wasn't actually scary, I found it to be quite frightening. There's these alien monster zombie things coming at you, and they jump out from corners, and there's all these jump moments in it. I love that. It took what Doom did wrong, which is make every character appear from the same side of you and in similar places, and plays with your mind a little bit. And there's also, beyond just the shooting parts of it, there's some great instances where you get grabbed by the leg and something's dragging you down, and it's sort of a cinematic experience, but you're trying to shoot this thing so your leg is free. That just got my adrenaline going, and left me leaning up in my chair and really on the edge of my seat. So really awesome game, and it's not just a traditional first person shooter. You really do, they focus on this thing which was called strategic dismemberment, which first of all is an awesome name for a feature. But you basically go around, and to kill the zombies, you can't just shoot them, but you have to chop off their limbs with various mining lasers and saw blades and stuff like that. And it really is cool, because you have a limited amount of ammo, like you do in any sort of survival shooter. And it's all about sort of making each shot count, so that, a zombie thing will be running at you, and you're sort of, frantically sort of trying to get that aim, so it's right about at its head, or right about to cut off its arms and legs. And just before it gets to you, you'll nail down its legs, and it goes tumbling forward, and the physics work, it's totally awesome.
And then you stomp on it and smash it with your boots, and that part's rather visceral and
It's
what platform did you play it on?
I played it on Xbox 360. That was my platform of choice for this.
I got it for PC. I actually got it for free at a little EA presentation thing that was here at the university.
Hmm.
Pretty sweet. Actually, technically, I won the T-shirt and Lars won the game, but his computer wouldn't play it, so we traded.
Awesome.
I got the better part of that deal.
But yeah, it's a really fun game. It didn't get as much press because it got overshadowed by a lot of these other games that came out after it, like Fallout 3 and Fable 2. But go back and play this game. If you're a first person shooter guy, you owe it to yourself to play this game. It is it's by far the most beautiful looking game I think this year. Totally worth getting through. Has some amazing boss fights where you're fighting these huge, huge things, and it has this epic scale and feel to it. And totally worth your time.
You know what's interesting about you saying that it's the prettiest game you've played?
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about it is it's not all that graphically taxing. I could bump up all of the specs on my PC, and my computer's not top of the line, and I was playing the thing at 1280 by 960. So not an incredible vast resolution, but certainly not low res.
Right.
So I thought that very interesting, that you are calling it the best looking game.
And not the most taxing.
A very fair estimation. I thought it looked very good, but I was surprised at how well it ran on my machine. If you don't have a 360 and you have a decent PC, something that's got, a modern processor and at least a GeForce 7 series card, you're probably okay on this.
Cool. Well, it's great to hear that it's a scalable game as well. So.
Definitely. And it even scales back pretty nicely. It's a shame to lose some of the lighting because, of course, you lose some of the stuff, but you can scale it back.
Yeah.
Looks like it came out on the original Xbox, and it still plays decently there too.
Yeah, sure.
I just played around with the settings a little bit, thinking that it might totally trounce my computer, but was surprised when it didn't.
Yeah, So Dead Space, I don't think it got a lot of love because of everything else that overshadowed it. But looking back at the games that I play this year, this is definitely my number three favorite game by far.
Now I want to tell you why it didn't make my list.
Sure.
It didn't make my list, and I disagree with you on a lot of things that you're saying about it, but that's fine.
It didn't make
my list, first of all, because I didn't like the way it controlled. Maybe that's PC versus Xbox thing. I didn't like the way that you pan the camera, and then you press forward, and you walk in the direction of the camera. It reminded me of controlling the Warthog in Halo, where you spin the camera around, and then you say, go forward, and it finds the path to go in that direction.
Interesting.
And that's the way your character controls. I found the camera to be a bit too tight, maybe because I'm playing in full screen and should be in widescreen, but I would hope that any game ought to take advantage of...
Take that into account,
although at
right.
this point, you know, widescreen is kind of the way things are
sure.
going.
Sure, and again, I play it on my 1080p HDTV, and so plenty of screen, yeah. plenty of screen real estate there.
Right, right. I thought that it was... It didn't really aspire to show me anything new, and so the scare factor wasn't there. It was mostly just startle
sure.
factor, which got a little tiring after a point because I'm going, okay, now they're about to scare me again.
Right.
Here it comes. There. All right.
Sure.
And so it got a little bit tiring. I may, from your praise, I may have to go back in, give it a little bit longer. Because maybe once you get to some more interesting different points of the game, that could quickly change.
The other thing I thought
was characters fell a little flat.
I'll agree with that one, definitely.
So, anyway, you were going to retort
I agree that there isn't a whole lot of, like, new scare. I mean, it is zombie things, and that's, you know, that's very common for video games.
Basically Event Horizon.
Yeah, to some degree. But, I mean, to be honest, like, I mean, I know there are new ways you can scare people in stuff, but I still enjoy a sort of classic, you know, like, even going seeing, like, a classic, like, you know, horror hack and slash movie. To me, this felt like that. Like, I enjoy stuff jumping out at you, and I thought there were some good twists on it, too, that I really enjoyed. And to me, you know, something that jumps out at me frightens me because it gets my adrenaline going. Like, something that just looks scary doesn't frighten me because it's a video game and it's not real. Like, I want to be frightened because I think my character is in trouble.
It's about to die because I'm going to fill it full with bullets.
Yes, so... You
know? and I will give it that it does a very technically good job of leading up to and following through with the jump out at you scare.
Yes.
If you like that thing, you will love the game.
Yep.
If that thing tires you after a while, you're probably better off looking somewhere
else. I actually know, like, a bunch of people who don't like scary games like that because it is sort of a taxing experience. Like, after a while, like, you have all that adrenaline going, it's a very wearisome thing. But one thing I think actually Dead Space does a good job is that if you want to, it offers plenty of spaces to sort of stop and, like, purchase more ammo and make sure, like, you're ready to go so you never feel like you're unprepared for what you're going for. Like, I feel like they give you enough opportunities to do that if you feel like you want that. I actually, like, skip some of them sometimes because I like the feel of, you know, like, sort of planning my shots and being on that edge. But it does provide outs, I think, for people who don't like games that are as intense.
That's true.
Cool.
All right, let's continue.
All right, so on to my number two game, which is also something that you guys did not mention, and I am quite shocked and appalled, but you can get into that. This is LucasArts' release, which is The Force Unleashed.
I bring Darth Vader's enemies to justice.
Thinks he's turned you, but I can sense your future. And Vader won't always be your master.
Poor boy. The Sith always betray one another.
You're still loyal to Vader after he branded me a traitor.
There's much conflict in you. Your feelings for your new allies are growing stronger. Do not forget that you still serve me.
So, okay, this almost was my favorite game of the year. Not quite, because there's another much more deserving awesome game. But The Force Unleashed, to me, and this is a weird thing, because, like, so many people seem to not like this game, and I don't understand for the life of me why not. Like, loved the death out of this game. You can pick up stormtroopers and throw them around and dangle them and force lightning them and do whatever you want in a really responsive control system. You can pick up TIE fighters and throw them at people. You can do all this awesome, cool stuff and feel like you are this crazy, badass Jedi, and it sells that so much better than I think any other Star Wars game has done before. And even though, like, the Star Wars story that they bake into this, so they actually try to bake in this little bridge between, I guess, the end of Episode 3 into the beginning of Episode 4, which I thought was terrible and stupid. But beyond that, like, more than anything else, this game made me love Star Wars again. Like, so many things about it just made me realize, like, this is why I like Jedis. This is why I like that environment. There's so many cool things that you can do. And technically, they do it so well. Even though there are some bugs, there are some glitches in it, you're going to experience it. But that's because they're using new technology to really break ground. So, now, I know you guys played this, and I've been sort of monologuing for a while, so why don't you guys tell me a little bit what you thought of this game? Or if you did play it. I know Steven did.
One thing I thought, and I played briefly and watched some as well, was that they were very selective on what they allowed you to use physics on. And I always find this
really
disconcerting and sort of throws me out of the immersion of the experience. Hmm. When, you know, physics affects some objects like TIE fighters, but not other objects like trees, it bothers me. You know, if I can yank a TIE fighter out of the air, but when it lands on the ground, it bounces off a tree rather than, you know, uprooting it. And I know that that would be a technical brick wall, not just a hurdle.
But since you've told someone that they can pick up a TIE bomber and throw it, you expect a tree weighs less than a TIE bomber, right?
Yeah, you expect it, you know, at the very least, break the tree.
Right.
Don't worry about trying to uproot it, but we can break things. We know how to do that in
no,
games.
No, go ahead.
Other than that, it wasn't Jedi Knight or Jedi Knight 2, and so I'd have to knock it down a couple of notches for that, huh. But that's my personal preference.
Interesting. I would actually say it wasn't Jedi Knight, and it was not Jedi Knight 2, therefore it gets bumped up several notches.
Really? Well, okay, maybe the first Jedi Knight. It had some cool level design, but it was clunky on the lightsaber.
Yeah.
I really liked Jedi Knight 2 a whole lot for what I found to be its depth in both ranged and melee combat. Hmm. And it also did its level design very well, and it was a brutally difficult game.
It was
in
a hard game.
Certain
now see, this
sort
is
of says Star Wars to me.
This is
but
where
then, of course, I got my teeth on, say, sorry.
Okay, yeah, I mean, this is, like Jedi Knight 2, like, yeah, you have, like, lightsabers, but I felt like all the Jedi Knight games just made lightsaber combat so ridiculously boring. Like, you're fighting other Jedis, and it's basically run up to them and, like, pound, 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 and it doesn't really feel like you're fighting with a lightsaber. It just feels like you're running up to someone and doing, like, the same slash move. Whereas, like, in this game, like, you can do these little, like, build up these combos, like, if you want to play the game in a bit more advanced way, and you could do stuff like baseball bat a stormtrooper with your lightsaber, which is awesome. Like, I don't know, like, I found it so much more entertaining than the Jedi Knight series, which is sort of the obvious comparison point. But yeah, it's a cool game, and actually surprised that you said that the physics is what sort of took you out of this game, because one of the coolest things I found about this game is they implemented the Euphoria Engine, which is sort of this AI driven physics based model, and they also they did this thing, it was called like digital materials or something like that. But it's these cool new technologies where they actually model materials like they would be in real life. So if it's metal and you hit it, it bends. If it's wood and you hit it, it splinters. If it's glass, you hit it, it shatters. And I found that to be so cool. Like, the first corridor I went through in this game, I walked up to this metal panel, and I force-pushed it, and it bent in where I force-pushed it. And I was like, holy crud. So I hit it again and again and again, and eventually this thing got, like, crumpled and bent in. I was like, that's awesome. And, like, the first door you come up to, like, it doesn't just open for you. And it, you could actually push it, and it bends out, like, in this realistic way. And I don't know, I just thought that was so cool looking. I've never seen a game do that, and I hope more games use this sort of this materials modeling stuff. So I found that to be an amazing feat that I felt a lot of people kind of overlooked. It's like, this is awesome. Like, no one's done metal bending physics before. No one's done, like, semi-realistic wood splintering physics.
So you walk out into their occasional natural landscapes, and the same thing doesn't happen to the ground underneath you and things like that.
I would agree with that. Though, like there's this one landscape you're in that's like all like these like gelatiny like mushroom things. And the cool thing is like there's a forest of them, and you can force push at the forest, and the whole forest goes like wobble 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 and gets pushed aside. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I really found that to be quite cool. Like, that's exactly what I would expect would happen. So I don't know. I really like this game. I think, like, I don't know how, like, dangling a stormtrooper like over a pit and then like smacking him into like the side of a wall can ever get boring. I could still go back and play this game over and over. It really, I think, nails what it feels to be, or nails what it means to be a Jedi, which is like total awesome, overpowered. I don't know. I loved it. So though clearly some differences.
The thing that I thought it definitely embodied what it was like to be a Jedi in the ideals of the prequel trilogy.
Sure.
I thought that the Jedi Knight series did a tremendous job of embodying what it felt like to be a Jedi in the envisioning of the original trilogy, which was this person who was overpowered and was very capable, but needed also to approach these situations with care.
Sure.
And with some cunning, because they couldn't just go in and be an invincible badass.
Right.
Which you can kind of do, but it's still hard to do in The Force Unleashed. I'll grant it that.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to draw a black and white line.
Sure.
Between the two.
Yeah, no, I agree. It sort of, depending on how like you like your Jedi served up, I think this game will appeal or not appeal to you. But
I know what it was. There was this level. It was like the second one, third one maybe. You're in this junkyard kind
right.
of area. What really turned me off to this game? You jump down this little place. Can't remember what you were trying to do here, but eventually you were trying to open this door on the other
sure.
side of this toxic
sure.
waste. But if you try to jump back up on one side, well, you can't quite get back up there. On one side, there's a way that looks relatively flat.
Yeah.
It's a little bit higher up, and you can probably hop from there up to the top.
Sure.
Except as soon as you land on this supposed platform, which appears just like all the rest, mostly, it happens to be outside of the area where the developers want you to play. And they kill you instantly for stepping on.
Yeah.
And I was, at that point, really against the way they were trying to design this game.
I'll admit, I
didn't find that to be the case in any of the Jedi Knight games.
Sure.
Unless it was the platform you just absolutely could never get back up from.
Yeah.
They would never do that to you. You could walk around little pieces of geometry that they had never intended to be platforms.
Sure.
And get all over the place.
Yeah, I will agree. There are some pretty bad glitches in here. Like, I remember one time I was like jumping in this mushroomy level, and I got stuck in a place where I was on flat ground, but I was sliding and like stuck in this infinite slide loop, and I couldn't get out of it. The only way I could get out of it is by like restarting, going to the back to the last checkpoint. So.
Yeah, what irked me so much was not that this was a glitch, but that this was designed to kill me for attempting to think laterally in this case. I didn't
sure.
like that, but
yeah.
But the rest of the game, I'll admit, was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, I will prop this one up as one of my favorite games. My number two game of this year, or I guess last year, 2008. Cool. Well, I will now end up things with by far the best game of 2008.
Dun dun. Wally. Dun.
Close. No, not really. Which is Jonathan Blow's Braid. So this is a basically everything else on my list, maybe except Castle Crashers, are AAA titles, like big stuff. People poured millions of dollars into these. Braid is a 2D puzzler platformer made by a independent developer, Jonathan Blow, for somewhere in the ballpark of maybe $100,000 or a little bit more. It's on the Xbox Live Arcade. And okay, so I've never been that big into sort of casual games or independent games. I've slowly been sort of getting my chops and sort of getting into that independent mindset. And when this game came out, there was these huge waves about it. People said, you know, you should go play this game. So I downloaded it and played it. It's so I don't know quite how to describe it. It has this atmosphere to it that is a unique, it's relaxing, it's, I don't know what it is, like the art style to it, the gameplay mechanics just drew me in. Like, I have not had
their impressionist art style, that was cool, and the way things kind of move and undulate, and then when you turn back time they go backwards.
Yeah, I guess I best sort of explain this game. It's a puzzle platformer, and it's all based around these sort of different time mechanics. And that's the first thing you learn out the first time you die, is that you run into one of these little, like, Goomba characters as you're going through the platformer. Your guy falls to the bottom of the screen, and then it just kind of pauses there, and says, you know, press the X button. I'm like, okay, I'll press the X button. And suddenly time reverses back. Like, it rewinds, the music goes in reverse, all the stuff that was, like, kind of falling in the background reverses back up, and you're like, I see. I can save myself from death by hitting the reverse button. And then you just try pressing it again, you realize I could reverse my gameplay stuff by hitting the X button. And as you go on, they
everything all the way back to when you enter any room in the game.
And as they move on, they turn that into a puzzle element where, like, you pick up something that isn't affected by time, or certain enemies aren't affected by time, or they add on this thing where, like, as you go back in time, your shadow goes back forward, and these really cool and clever puzzles, which to me, if nothing else, it deserves best game for that, because these are some of the most creative and clever game mechanics I've seen baked into a game in such a long time. It's so incredibly refreshing. And maybe that's just because I'm not in that kind of independent game world where they're making all these kind of leaps and bounds in gameplay, but ridiculously fun, like, and challenging too.
In terms of the basic mechanics, it does nothing. Like the running and the jumping, it does nothing that the original Super Mario Brothers did not do.
No,
running and jumping and hopping on things and occasionally hitting a switch.
And
but
yeah,
it adds the layer of time aspect to that and turns it into a puzzle game. And there's some genius going on there. I think Tycho from Penny Arcade put it best, and I'm gonna paraphrase and butcher what he said. But basically, within the first 10 minutes. Your mind is destroyed and remade by playing this game. It's
I totally agree with you. Like, there's this one part in the first level where you're trying to, like, drop down this channel and reach this little area, which is kind of hard to get to. And the first time you miss it, you're like, oh, crap, I gotta go find stairs and jump down this thing. And then, like, it dawns on you, like, wait a second, I can reverse time. And so you reverse time a little bit, and you're like, you try to move yourself over, you miss it, you reverse it a little bit, try to move over, miss it. You're like, this is the best game mechanic ever made. This is...
You use it, like, not even to pull yourself up and try the jump again, but just to pull yourself a little bit further up in your fall.
Yeah.
And start moving sooner. Yeah.
It's it's really remarkable. I think, again, I think this was an IGF winner, the Independent Games Festival, really cool game. And beyond that, like, so the mechanics of it itself are unique and fun. They're great puzzles. Like, it'll take you some time to figure it out. Once you've figured them out, you will feel smart. I love games that do that. But beyond that, there's so much beautiful atmosphere built into this. So there's this really cool kind of mood music going on, and there's this whole kind of, like, watercolor painting aspect to it that really adds a cool level to it. Like, I would come home from work and turn on this game, and I felt like I was, like, you know, just, like, sort of, you know, laying back into, like, a nice comfortable chair. It just felt comfortable and relaxing to play. I don't know what they did about this, but some combination of, like, that art style and this sort of simple 2D platforming mechanics married with this cool time physics manipulation stuff just made this game such a winning package for me.
Well, I'm going to put on my critic hat for a moment. And I'm going to say a few things that I didn't like about the game.
Go for it.
One is I thought it was far too pretentious at presenting its story.
I will totally agree with you on that.
It, first of all, required you to read pages and pages of straight text, which is, I'm sorry, no matter what you, well, in certain cases it's okay.
Yeah, like, well, like Japanese role-playing games?
Absolutely no. In design for this game was trying to tell its story through this and through using the mechanics as metaphors for something else that he really meant.
Sure.
Did not like that at all. And then tying it in to, spoiler alert, the atomic bomb at the end just was like, oh, dude, you are way out there.
I'll agree with it. The game's story really is pretentious, and I think in the review I wrote of this, that was actually sort of my main complaint about it. This is one of my few complaints about it, is it really does, it presents you this, like, almost literature-esque story that you have to read in these little booklet stuff, and then it kind of throws you, like, the last level, it kind of throws you for this weird loop where you're, like, reading this extra text that, you know, includes, like, quotes from Oppenheimer and this weird crap about the atomic bomb. I had no idea what Jonathan Blow was talking about. I don't think even Jonathan Blow knows what he was talking about. That part...
Now, I will say this. If you're upset by that, go watch the YouTube video of Soulja Boy playing this game. And just enjoy that aspect of it, because you can have a blast that way with the game, too.
Yes, indeed.
Have you seen that?
No, I haven't, but I've heard hilarious things about it.
Hilarious.
By the way, so beyond that, so great story, great, or not great story, great environments, great feeling to this, great game mechanics.
Not great story. Not, great environment. Great,
yes, mechanics. Not great story. Story is wacky and goofy.
Sorry, I think we interrupted you a while back, or you tried to interject. What were you going to say about this?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I have something to say about this?
You seem to. Maybe not.
Maybe he's just twiddling his mic.
Okay.
Well, with that,
I have nothing to say about this.
With that, great response, I will say what sealed this game for me as game of the year, and I don't want to tell you what it is because it totally spoils the game if I tell you what it is. But the last level is the single most amazing thing I've ever seen in a video game. It took this video game from being a fun platformer to being a mind-blowing piece of art.
Yeah, this is the point at which your mind it has been systematically, like a Jenga tower, tiny pieces pulled out from it, and then at the end they just, you know, smash that to pieces and rebuild it from the ashes, and you're like, whoa.
When I finished the last, and again, this is the last level, not the epilogue. The epilogue sucks, but the last level,
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Uh-huh. The last level, like, when I had finished that level, I literally put my controller down and was staring open mouth at the screen going, holy crap.
Yes,
oh my
yes,
goodness.
Yes.
I had like this, you know, goosebumps going through me. I'm like, that is like, you know, there's, it was amazing. It's hard to describe the feeling. I've never played a video game that made me feel like that. I've never played a video game that gave me those kind of like emotions and that kind of like blown away moment. And I've played a lot of video games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Stunning work, Mr. Blow. I look forward to your next project, with bated breath.
I tip my critic's hat to you and take it off at this point.
Great. So I think that's about all I can say on that. I'm done on that.
It is finished.
Awesome game. You should play this. Holy crud! If you can, you know, get this game for PC or for Xbox Live Arcade, play this game. It will change your perceptions about things. It's that good. Yes. So that wraps up my top 10, and we are already at a over the time spot. So I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the main segment of our show. Thanks for listening so far, the one or two listeners that have braved through these hour plus shows. Again, come back to Daily Monotony for all of their reviews and opinions that we can place up of movies, games, TV content that we will attempt to get up at a much more non-erratic rate. Hopefully you put the daily back in dailymonotony.com, but thanks for joining us. We hope you come back and join us again.
Or at least the monotony in it. As long as we're consistent. Thanks again for listening.
Ta-ta for now.